So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the Nick de Vries of F1 podcasts.
We thought we'd get rid of a Dutchman, but then get another one in to present.
Yeah, I have a very poor Dutch accent, although I do speak Dutch.
Who's Nick de Vries?
Do you remember him?
No.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, dominating the F1 podcast scene for the past 12 races.
Is it going to get boring if we're just consistently the best F1 podcast?
Let's find out.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the smash trophy of F1 podcasts.
A lot of effort went into creating this podcast, and then Lando Norris came along and smashed it.
But like the trophy that he smashed, it looked quite shit.
But so much work went into it.
I know.
It was handmade, took 6 months.
This is what I tell people.
Took 6 months.
Each podcast takes 6 months.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the low-level comeback of F1 podcasts.
We're back.
Daniel Ricciardo's boots are finally dry from the last shoey 3 years ago.
His boots are safe for now.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the podcast F1 deserves. I'm Drew Stern, and I'm back making my unexpected return to the podcast and hoping I can show my worth. Who knows, next year maybe I can host a podcast that's actually any good. In the meantime, we'll be talking about the Hungarian Grand Prix, a race where we dared to dream that maybe, just maybe, Max Verstappen wouldn't romp to an easy victory. But then our dreams were dashed, and now Formula One is just a tedious exercise in the inevitability and the futility of hope. So stay tuned for fun! That's all to come. Joining me is a man who's gone electric. It's Phil Tromans.
I've often compared myself to Bob Dylan, but this last couple of weeks it's become especially true. You may know that I've been reviewing and driving and writing about cars for a long time.
You have.
But, you know, we live in a changing planet, and I've embraced mobility. And I've started reviewing e-bikes and scooters.
Ooh.
Professionally.
Hang on, when you just said mobility and scooter, you're reviewing yeah. mobility scooters?
Not that kind of scooter.
Okay.
I mean, to be honest, if anyone's out there and they want to pay me to do it, I will happily review some mobility scooters. But no, because I'm freelance these days, I've started writing about e-bikes. And I went up to London the other day and rode a ton of e-bikes. I've got to stop saying drive. I rode a ton of e-bikes. And it was really good fun. And now I want an e-bike. But they are quite expensive.
So that's quite dangerous.
So if any e-bike manufacturers want to sponsor us, I'm up for it.
So being someone who only learned to ride a bike 2 years ago, I view e-bikes as devil, and it's not real bikes, and that's cheating. Convince me.
Well, there is, well, you know, there's as somebody who rides road bikes and has been overtaken by people on e-bikes going up hills, I do regarded as cheating. If you're having a race, then yes, it's cheating. But if you want to commute and you don't want to be silly sweaty, or you want to tow the kids around, and
sweaty.
You don't want to have to plow out 500 watts just to tow your toddler up a small crest, then e-bikes are the way to go. They're great. I'm very impressed by them. It's a different thing.
I'll warn you though, they can be quite dangerous. I committed to an e-bike just after lockdown, and I've now a kind of massive scar on my shoulder.
Ooh, showing us the scar.
Courtesy
listeners.
Of an, yeah, it's about a 7-inch scar. I've got a metal plate and 7 collarbone? Screws. Yeah, my collarbone snapped in 3 places.
Ooh, have you got one of these illegal ones? Accident. Were you one of these? Were you on one of these illegal ones that you chipped or hacked or tuned, or you were bombing around stealing things?
Well, that depends. As kids do. Are you now, or have you ever been a member of the law enforcement agencies?
I haven't.
Okay. Do you think anyone listening has?
Very much doubt it. We'd have heard from them by now if they were.
It's a fully compliant bike.
There we go. We're starting. This is why we need the law to come down heavily on ne'er-do-wells who may or may not have done things to their e-bikes. I would not, as somebody who's never, ever illegally tuned a car and not declared it, I stand in judgment of you.
And I stand judged. And beside him is a man who has had the worst food poisoning. It's Terry Saunders.
Weirdly, this story starts off with me falling off my bike, bizarrely. So last Sunday, I fell off my bike, and I didn't hurt myself too, but didn't even break the skin. I just went over a tiny... Here in Berlin, there's often cycle lanes are often delineated with a tiny curb that if you go across that tiny curb, you will fall off your bike and into traffic. It's very good. So that's what I did Sunday afternoon. I was on the way to a swimming pool, so I was very annoyed. But I didn't really hurt myself, didn't even break the skin, but I landed, I went a big clatter, clatter, clatter. But I did hurt my arm to a point where I can't really move my arm behind my back all the way without there being a kind of nasty... So, you know, that's that. On Monday, I was feeling a bit sorry for myself and a bit tired, so I thought I'd cook myself a nice meal. So I got some steak, and I made some, like, boiled some potatoes, and I steamed some carrots, and I steamed some broccoli.
Sorry, can I just interrupt for 1 second? Yes. Aren't you vegan?
Oh, not anymore. Okay. No.
Oh, that's gone, hasn't it?
That went in lockdown, Phil. That was...
Right.
Like most vegans, I talk about becoming a vegan. I don't talk about not lapsing. No, I lapsed my veganism because it was lockdown. I'd moved to a new country. I was single. I was depressed. And I was wearing a mask in the local supermarket. And I went past the eggs and I started crying. And I said to myself, I just want a fucking omelette. So that was when I broke my veganism. Anyway, so now not vegan at all, except for my two vegan friends here in Berlin who I don't lie to them, but I've not told them that I'm not a vegan anymore. So I always eat vegan food with them and go, yeah, go on, meat eaters, eh? Anyway, this is going to come and bite me on the ass because I cooked this meal, steak, potatoes, veg, lovely, lovely, lovely meal. And last minute, I thought, do you know what would be nice? I'm going to fry off these potatoes and steamed veg in some butter. And in the kind of pan where I cooked the steak, add a lot of flavour to it. You know, that's a nice kind of thing. Dash of something. And I put that all in the pan. I left the room and I came back and I was like, oh, something smells funky. And I gave the butter a sniff and it's like real butter that I've had for ages because I'm mostly vegan. And I was like, oh, that smells off, you know. And when butter smells off, it really smells. So the whole kitchen smelled of like off butter. But I'd put like all of my food that I've been cooking for ages in this fucking pan. So I was like, oh, what's the worst that could happen? You know, I'll have a bit of a stomachache, it'll be fine. Well, reader, the worst that could happen is that I had the shits for a week. I have been so ill. Seriously, I have been the illest I've ever been. And what makes it worse is I'm getting up several times in the night to have a shit, and the arm that I hurt falling off my bike is my butt wiping arm. So every time I go to wipe my ass, I'm like, ow, ow, ow. It's been a horrible week.
Oh no!
But I'm okay now. Today,
there's somewhere a butter joke that I can't find.
But honestly, today is the first day that I felt not ill. That was last Monday. I ate the steak.
That's so the power of the podcast.
The power of the podcast and the power of rancid butter. So this is what I've learned: don't eat rancid butter. Folks.
I don't think I've ever smelled rancid butter because I just don't think. I think we just get through it too quickly.
Yeah, I didn't think butter went off. Really,
it smells pretty bad though. I thought the whole point of it was that it lasts for ages.
That's the thing. It was really obviously off. It was like there was no when I smelt that funky smell in the kitchen. It was like, and that's what I hate, because so on all the nights where I'm up at 3 a.m. shitting, you know, shitting liquid, and I'm just there going, oh, this is because you ate the fucking butter. You know, it's like, it's not like I went, oh, I had a meal, I didn't know. I went to a restaurant and it was me. I smelt that funk and I was like, I'm gonna risk it. and I risked it.
Smell the funk.
I smell the funk. T-shirt. Butter.
Fuck butter. There's another t-shirt. Butter, smell the funk.
I think I might become a vegan, Phil. Their food doesn't go off.
Drew! I mean, I always hesitate to ask, but how are you?
I'm okay.
Welcome back. What have you been up to?
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's been a year, I think, since I was on the podcast thereabouts. It's nice to be back. Yeah. It was definitely last season. British Grand Prix, maybe? Maybe I did one after that. Lots happened. I joined you in the land of the recently made redundant a couple of months ago.
Yeah, one of us.
Yeah, trying to get my legs back underneath me. And this week we have been dog sitting, which is a new adventure for me. I've been one of those dads who
professionally
said,
or?
No. I never
Freelance
wanted.
Is
pets.
Going well, is it?
Yeah, I never wanted pets, but my kids were, especially my daughter, really wanted a dog, and my wife found this website called Borrow My Doggy, where you can help other people who need help with their dog. And turns out this one family who don't live too far from us are going on holiday this week, and their dog sitter fell through, and so we are sitting their dog. And they say that there is no love purer than that between a dad and the dog he said he didn't want. And that's what it's felt like this week. Like, I'm no interest in pets or dogs at all, and then this week it's just been like having a little furry baby in the house. It's been wonderful. Aww.
Oh, I mean, he's screaming a lot and pooing everywhere.
That's me. Okay.
She pissed on the carpet once. Apart from that, it's been pretty good. Picking up poop for the first time since I had babies. So it's returning to that. But yeah, that's been kind of nice for the mental health. It's been a very pleasant
experience.
That sounds
nice. It's like having somebody else's dog without having to like steal it. And
yeah.
You know,
what's the dog's name?
Luna. Little Luna. Cocker Spaniel. One year old. Just turned one. Yeah.
Okay. So you haven't gone into the deep end with like a sort of, you know, a massive great Alsatian called Ripper or anything like that?
No, I think this was the perfect size.
This is murder. Of dog.
This is it. Like, it'd be like one of those Columbo episodes where someone lends someone a killer dog, so they've got the ultimate alibi that they were abroad when this dog killed someone. And then it'd be up to me to prove that I didn't set the dog. No, nothing like that.
Why is the
worst she does
walking
is
me
lick
to Buckingham Palace?
Why has it got a crossbow?
If that never was the plot of a Columbo episode, I feel it should be written, because that's a pretty good alibi.
AI will kick in something about that. There'll be new Columbo episodes up within the year, I'm sure.
To Listener's Corner, which is mostly slow or medium this week, possibly because we forgot to post the Facebook prompt for comments until shortly before recording. Sorry about that. Anyway, after so many dull races this year, the Hungarian Grand Prix was better, wasn't it? Opinion is divided. Savat Jam says, after all the potential of qualifying, the Hungarian GP, the massive dry hump that F1 deserves. Ryan Simpson says, Norris smashing Max's trophy was the most interesting thing that happened all day. An absolute turd of a race. Jamie McNaught says, the race was a little bit like Kvyat's sex life from Kelly Piquet's point of view. Boring, long, think nothing is going to happen till a mild amount of intrigue before the finish, and Max always comes first.
I thought it was all right. Maybe I just have very low standards this season.
I mean, it was fine. It was just, you know, the qualifying built it up to be something and it wasn't. I think that was maybe the disappointment.
Well, I missed qualifying and watched it later, like not that long before the race. So I don't know. Maybe I wasn't swept up in the glory of it.
It did. Watched it live and it really did kind of tee you up for like, this could be interesting. And there was all this debate about, you know, will Max let Lewis through, like go ahead at the first corner, or will he attack him into the first corner? And literally all those questions were disappointingly answered before the first turn was over.
Yeah, within one corner everything was like, oh, okay, that's gonna happen.
And then
I still enjoyed it. I thought there was interesting stuff going on for the first time in God knows how long. He says, having not got to the teams yet, but on the top of my head, I think this is true. I think there was something interesting that I think I'll probably remember from every single team during the race.
There's a challenge.
Which doesn't often happen.
Okay, can maybe we
quite often, I'm just like, okay, Ferrari, blah, 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 Red Bull, blah, 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 Mercedes, blah, and everybody else was also there. But I think there was stuff going on all down the field this time, and I found that quite interesting.
Can we talk about the broken trophy? Because I only just watched the actual clip of it breaking. Have you seen the actual clip of it breaking?
Yeah.
Yes.
They did not talk about it on the Skyline coverage at all. They just completely ignored it happening or didn't notice it happening.
They did on the Sky Juniors thing that they've got going on now, which I don't think we've also not talked about very much, but that's a separate thing that we need to talk about probably. So, as you know, I don't know if you get this in Germany, Terry, but they've got kids doing F1 presenting now.
Oh, is that what Sky Juniors is? It's not young racers, it's precocious kids.
I think some of them also race, but they're basically television presenters and they're just like kids basically being the Sky crew and interviewing the drivers and talking
it's
to the
fucking
camera.
Fucking Jim will fix and it all over again.
It's like little Anton Deck.
Right, I don't know if I'm sure I've told this story before in the podcast, but in circa 1990 to 1991, I wrote to Jim Will Fix It because I wanted to commentate on a Grand Prix. Jim, dear Jim, will you fix it for me? Commentate on a Grand Prix? Yeah, I'll do whatever you want. And I didn't get even a reply. You know, I sent in a nude and everything. And... and then one night, I'm watching Jim Will Fix It on the telly. And they do this thing where someone writes in going, dear Jim, will you fix it for me to commentate on a Grand Prix? And I'm like, I am livid. Like, I am fucking furious. Like, what's wrong with me, Jim? And this little shit, what they get James Hunt in the studio, right? And they get him and this kid to commentate to a recording of an old Grand Prix on the telly. And that was it. And I was like, I was shouting at my mum going, I didn't want to record off the telly. I wanted to go to a Grand Prix. I've got enough knowledge that I could do a whole 2-hour commentary. Thank you very much with Murray Walker. Oh. So I don't want to see these little...
Well, you should apply.
Cunts.
You should apply to F1
no,
Juniors.
No, I don't want to see these little doing my job. Look, they've got to do it. They've got to learn the hard way. They've got to learn to fail big and then do a fucking podcast like everybody else.
Imagine anyway, how disappointed that kid was. Like, he didn't get to commentate on a proper race and then had to deal with Jim Will Fix It afterwards.
Well, maybe yes. He enjoyed it. So, what amused me a lot about the trophy smashing was Lando Norris has got his little signature move. He's been playing too much Fortnite. He thinks everyone's got to have a thing. And he smashes the bottle down on the podium to make it froth up, which is fucking pathetic. Like, grow up, shake the bottle like a real man. And then... What I noticed though,
put a wreath on.
He did drink some fucking milk. He did it on Max's podium step because he did it on that, which is what made it. What because his one didn't fall off and Perez's one didn't fall off. He did it on his own step. He would have broken his own one. So he broke Max's trophy by doing his stupid thing on the top step, and that's why they should ban him for a race.
But he did it on the top step last week as well. Like at Silverstone, he did it on the top step.
Well, it's just and near, isn't it? If you're in the second thing, it's just the nearest one to you. I mean, I guess
not if you break a €40,000 ugly, really, really ugly porcelain.
Oh, it's all right. I've seen worse.
It was the fact
it was
porcelain.
As the plastic Heineken ones.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, it's handmade. It's art. It's hand painted. Gold. It's got gold on it.
Not anymore.
There's a video on the company that makes it. They've got a video of them preparing it. In fact, there's like a guy punching it out with a little tool and like making all their little things in it. And
isn't this now going to be an artifact of F1 history, like a smashed trophy from like the first shoe that a shoe was done from, or the first.
It's going to be like Sterling Moss's bent steering wheel from when he crashed it. Wherever
you can
it was,
still buy bits of the Berlin Wall. It's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go to Budapest now, you're going to be able to buy bits of Max Verstappen's trophy for a long time.
If Lando becomes world champion at some point, that might be a nice little keepsake, a shard from the trophy of Max that he smashed. Symbolically, the start of his walk towards knocking him off his perch for 2027. I mean,
maybe this is all deliberate. Maybe this is like the start of the mind games from Lando. He's like, I'm coming for you. I'm going to smash your trophy, then I'm going to smash you.
If it was anyone else, you could have potentially thought it was malicious. But because it was Lando, it doesn't really occur to you that at any point he could have thought... Because he just looked like a little boy who'd been caught out like with his fly down or something.
He's
he looked kind
quite
of embarrassed.
A lot like a little boy, isn't he? How old is he now? Because I mean, obviously he's very young, but I think he's older than I think
he is.
Oh,
he's probably like 23, isn't he? I'm going to say 23.
Lando, he is 23. Good guess.
23.
Really? Which God, that was my joke go to low guess, so that'd be funny. Oh my God.
He'll be 24
God,
later
so
in the year. Yeah.
I'm so old. I'm sick of this.
We're all old.
Me
Terry.
Too.
We're all old
enough to be Lando Norris's dad, but we're not rich enough to be Lando Norris's dad.
In other news, Amid all the fun of the race in Hungary, we should talk about the relatively small tweak to qualifying that was made, known as the alternate tyre allocation. The change meant that drivers had to use a set type of tyre for each qualifying session. Do you think it made any noticeable difference?
Well, qualifying was quite fun. So this was like Q1, now everybody had to use hard tyre. Q2, everybody had to use medium tyre. Q3, everybody had to use soft tyre. So it sort of... scrapped the idea of teams like shit teams bolting on a set of softs and getting through to Q2 somehow. I don't know if qualifying was fun because of this or because of something else.
I loved it. I think it's a great rule change. I like it.
Why?
Just makes it easier. Q1 hard, Q2 medium, Q3 soft. It's simple. I like it.
No, that's true.
No fucking about.
So are you genuinely in favour of simplification of rules?
In this kind of way, because I'll always remember the time I went on that, and no shade to this other podcast, that F1 strategy podcast that we've all been invited onto at one point, and the guy was asking
me... It's a good podcast.
It's a really good
podcast.
It's a lot better now. It's a lot better. I'm not having to go at the podcast, but I am having to go at the fact that he asked me about tyres, and I realised just how little I pay attention to tyres.
No, I was exactly the same.
Because the question was like, so, and of course, they wanted a soft, medium, soft thing. And I'm like, I don't care. I really don't care. And if I had my way, there would just be one tyre that they'd use. Nothing. Just, I don't care about these different compounds. I don't know what it means. I don't understand. I don't know what happens. I don't understand why they spend hours going around the track over the weekend saying, oh, we've done 3 race simulations on this tyre, but during the race, it seems to be behaving differently. Then why are we fucking bothering? Hate it. Fucking hate tyres.
So you're not necessarily a fan of it from the point of view of the impact it has on the race.
Couldn't give a shit.
It's easy to understand.
Just couldn't give a shit. I just don't care.
Good. All right. Well... I mean, yeah, I was fine with it. They did it once. It seemed to work. Probably. Great. Let's keep it.
Perfect.
Are they going to keep it? I don't think they're going to keep it.
Well, it's not going to be for every race.
One more trial, right?
Yeah, they're doing a trial. But the thing is, do you know the reason behind it?
It's to reduce the amount of tyres total, right?
Yeah, because this means each driver, I think, takes 2 sets of tyres less to a race, which is like 40 sets of tyres per race. Fuck you. 40 sets of tyres per race, which over the course of a season is like a squillion tyres that they're not having to make. Because when they finish with these tyres, they just burn them in Turkey or something. I don't know. And so this is better for the environment. So Formula One...
I think they just go to the middle of the sea and throw them at dolphins.
They just throw them down to the Titanic.
But like you can't even buy them like as a souvenir. They keep them like they still keep them somewhere because they like looking at the tyre degradation is like important part of the research or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I know people have tried to buy
it's very important for lap time what's going to happen to this tyre after 5 years of sitting in the back of a warehouse. Just give it, I'll stick it on my wall, it'll look really good. I'd have a tyre on my wall.
Make a great coffee table. A glass on it?
Yeah. Quite a squidgy one, but sure. I have a hard one, yeah.
Remember when Alpine CEO said the team were shit and they suddenly got better? And everyone said, ha, maybe that's the way to be an F1 boss now. Yeah, Rossi's been given the hoof, so maybe that wasn't the answer. Philipp Kreef is now the big brand boss, while Bruno Famin takes up the position of vice president of motorsports and is Otmar Szafnauer's new boss. What are we to make of this?
This was quite interesting, I thought. That it must have been, 2 months ago sometimes, that Lauren Rossi, the then head of Alpine, the CEO of Alpine, came out and basically said, and not just once, but in a series of interviews, that the team were doing shit and they weren't good enough, and if they didn't improve, he's going to start firing some motherfuckers, or words to that effect. And actually not far from that effect. And then suddenly they did get a little bit better. And everyone was like, oh, the pep talk seems to have worked. And now they've had 2 double DNFs in a row, and he's been given the hoof. So I guess don't slag off your team.
My question is, does this mean that they're 100 races until they win the championship resets again? No, it's 100 races from now. No, from now. Starting from now. The last 5 years didn't count.
It wouldn't
start now.
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a bit about this later, but they are having an absolute shocker at the moment, and not entirely of their own fault as well.
No, true.
But, you know, I mean, get it, you know, it's another thing to... shake it all up. If I know anything about F1, is that changing lots of random things around at the top almost definitely has brilliant results.
Absolutely.
Is this a consequence of that new money coming in from those investor groups recently?
And they're now
casting more of an eye on it.
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. Now they're keeping an eye on things. They're taking a look at things. Maybe they're taking other things into consideration that other people haven't, and they're thinking, you know what, we need a shake up at the top, and they've put pressure on Renault to trickle that down. It could be, I mean, buying what, 25% of the team, that gives you quite a big voice in the room, right?
Which is why
now you've said that, this is almost definitely Ryan Reynolds.
Breaking news, the new Alpine CEO is Will Ferrell. But he's wearing a big moustache.
Oh, drive to survive this season's going to be good then.
I am French Will Ferrell.
My name is Philippe Clif.
For the sequel of Talladega Nights.
I would watch the hell out of that. I would watch the hell out of an F1 comedy movie with Will Ferrell as the Alpine CEO. That would be brilliant.
Well, it's not too late.
Never mind this bollocks with Brad Pitt. Just turn it around. Take all that footage you've been doing, change it so it's a slapstick comedy.
Well, Brad Pitt wasn't able to be at the race this week because of the strike.
Is this why? Because they're still filming background stuff, aren't they? But there's no writers and no actors.
Yeah. So I guess the writers aren't as necessary, but actors are fairly essential to a movie for now.
I saw the trailer for the Gran Turismo movie either today or yesterday. I can't remember when it was. And I thought maybe this was put together when the writers were on strike because it looks fucking awful.
That's the one about Jan Maldenborough, right?
Yeah, it looks terrible, really terrible. It looks like it looks like a sort of straight to DVD Freeview movie. It's awful.
Well, it is about a racer who got into racing through a video game, so it's like about a video game two steps removed.
I mean, it's not even. I mean, it's a mildly interesting story, especially the way his career sort of went on. Oh. But like. It just seems like it's just the most cliche-ridden nonsense of it. Just going purely from the trailer, I haven't seen the film, but it looks awful.
There's a great story there to be told. It's the first time there's ever been a major feature film made about someone who I've met, which I'm kind of excited about.
Ooh.
And I got to drive with him twice because he was with Nissan, obviously. That's how he got after the Gran Turismo stuff. He got in with Nissan. And do you remember the Duke R, Phil?
Yes, I've driven the Duke car.
Yeah, so I went to drive that with him. I drove it thinking I was pretty quick on a racing track, and then he drove me around when he had just started professionally racing, and I was like, oh my God, this kid really knows how to drive. He's played a lot of Gran Turismo. He really knows how to drive. Like, not just like, oh, he's good at video games and he can drive quick. No, I've driven with a lot of racing drivers and he was amazing. And then I met him a couple of years later and had dinner with him after that really bad accident that happened where he came off the track.
Oh yeah, he flipped over at the Nürburgring, didn't he?
Yeah, killed a spectator, unfortunately. And talked to him about that afterwards. And so he's had quite a lot happened to him. So I think there's a lot of material there to make a really interesting film. And it'd be a shame if the film doesn't do it justice, really. But yeah, the fact that
it doesn't look like it will. It doesn't look like it talks about his slightly dubious views on Twitter he's been espousing recently either. Yeah. They seem to have missed that bit out. It's weird.
You mean X?
Oh, we'll see.
Yeah.
Oh, X. Sorry. Yeah, it's not called Twitter anymore. It's called X.
Which doesn't X
go and give it to you? It's going to give it to you.
Which I think X sounds a bit like eggs, so I was going to always call it eggs from now on.
Yeah. Oh, the little birdies go X, X, X.
Anyway, look, let's get back on. Look, I'm going to be Matt. Let's be back on track.
Okay. You know when it really pisses it down and no driver apart from the leader can see anything because of the spray? Well, F1 boffins want to solve that. And after the British Grand Prix, Silverstone was the venue for the testing of some new prototype wheel covers. Mick Schumacher drove a specially kitted out Mercedes for the test, and the results were shite. FIA single-seater director Nicolas Tombazis said that it made no tangible difference. So that went well.
It's such an F1 thing to literally hire Silverstone, hire Mick Schumacher, run a Mercedes to try out this new prototype and find that it's completely useless. How do you design something that's completely useless and get it to the stage where you've hired all this stuff and spent all this money? Surely you'd be at least vaguely competent that it would sort of maybe work. Maybe not to the level you'd expect or want, but that it would do something. But he literally said, no, it was shit. It's like we had nothing.
Cling, so.
Is it just big flaps on the backs of the wheels?
It does
get
seem
on trucks?
Like appear to be. It does look like it's just like rally style, you know, mud guards. And they appear not to have worked. So now they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and try again. I just
make
thought
the
this
whole
was hilarious.
Cover the whole back of the car with cling film. To catch all
that's
the
it, is it? That's my thing. That's the story. Okay. I mean, it's an idea, and from the sounds of it, it would work better than this.
I mean, they barely race in the rain anyway anymore. As soon as it starts raining hard enough for spray to be that much of an issue, the race gets red flagged these
days,
right?
That's a very good point. But then would it get red flagged if they use cling film?
Oh, you mean if... I don't think the spray is the problem. It's the lack of grip and the fact that these cars can only race in... And the, well... But the spray, even without the spray, it's still dangerous in the rain.
But motorsport is dangerous, Drew. Says on the ticket.
No one has tickets.
Just because people die in the spray doesn't mean that they need to change anything. Anyway, it's the Belgian Grand Prix next week.
If it really rains with the new ground effect cars, does all the water get in the ground effect ducts and it squirts out the back?
That's
it's like a super soaker at the back.
Yeah.
It's like they've got a rear gunner with a water cannon.
Yeah, like where they could be that in harvesting battery, they've got another button that goes right, deploy water.
It swells up like a balloon and it sucks all the water, it just inflates and then deploy and it shoots out. But that would be extra thrust, right, from the jet of water.
It would give extra thrust, but then the weight would, you'd probably be losing the same amount of seconds a lap.
I think we'd then start to see like sort of hydrofoils on the front wings, so they sort of like riding up, surfing along the waves put out by the car in front. I mean, I'm all in favour of this. This sounds great. This is Adrian Newey's wet dream, no pun intended.
This actually will tie into my state of F1 this week, which I'm gonna preface now by saying I think I've nailed it.
Tell us how wrong we are. You can tweet us at For F1's Sake or find us on Facebook where we're For F1's Sake. Or email us at wrong@ff1s.com. Alternatively, if you think we're right, then why not buy us a beer? That's what he did, and by he, I mean Peter McLeod.
Well done, Peter McLeod. Good job he didn't leave a comment.
Thank you, Peter.
Fucking dick.
Thank you, Peter.
Put you guys in an awkward position with a comment that you know we're going to read out, but we might not read out, and we tried to read it out, and then we decided not to read it out, so fuck you. Keep your fucking money.
No. Thank you
right,
for the money.
We'll keep your fucking money, and we won't read out your fucking comment, you
Bernhard War.
Yay!
Chris Lee.
Yeah! Chris Lee.
Jenny and Ralph Brinard.
Jenny absolute stalwarts.
And Ralph Brinard. Oh, they don't leave awkward comments for us to read out about Jack Nicholls.
Andrew Cunningham.
Oh!
Good old Andrew. What a great guy.
Bryce Davies.
Bryce is nice.
Bryce. We've done that a lot, but it still stands.
Jason R. Bradley.
Jason F.
The
Cooper.
R stands for really.
David Findlay.
Inspector Findlay Mysteries.
What? Is that a thing?
That was a TV thing, wasn't it? Inspector Findlay?
That was Lindley.
Findlay.
Was it Lindley? Lindor.
You're thinking of Nicholas
Inspector Lindor.
You're thinking of the chocolates.
Nicholas Lindor?
You're thinking of the chocolates from Only for
anyway,
Horses.
Thank you, Nicholas Lindhurst, for the beer money.
Oh, he is called Dave. There we go. Perfect circular action. Oh, there we go. Great.
Nice.
Play it cool, Trigger.
I'm going to fall through a bar.
Join them. Join them all. Head to ff1s.com/pint. Teams still survive. Teams make the wish come true. Oh, keep your teams alive. Team on. Your teams will come alive. Come on, team on. Come on, team on. Come on, team on, boy. Your teams will come alive. Red Bull. Just for a second.
I love that. I have no idea what the song is. Because I didn't grow up in Europe in the early 90s, but, you know, it sounds great.
Yeah, I listened to it a few times beforehand.
I like to think the original goes, Red Bull, just for a second. What a coincidence.
Red Bull, just for a second, we thought it all could be different. Qualifying happened and Verstappen wasn't on pole. Could Lewis Hamilton, who famously starts well, keep him behind and create an upset? No, of course not. Hamilton went backwards and Verstappen promptly shot off into the distance. Meanwhile, Sergio Perez, who had got his customary massive fuck-up in nice and early during FP1, managed to come through from ninth on the grid to get third. Everyone said he'd done well, conveniently ignoring the fact that he shouldn't have been that far back in the first place.
Okay, so Perez, first
it's
of all.
It's the same old story.
Right.
All right.
Did you see the FP1 crash?
I did. I tuned into FP1 live while I was working. I literally turned it on. I'd missed the beginning by, I don't know, a few minutes. And I turned it on, and already Perez was in the wall.
I mean, again, I like
to... It was
to,
so funny.
I like to often have this thought of, what must it actually be like to be a Formula One driver, right? Now, we all imagine being, you know, sucked off by a supermodel on a yacht, but actually being a Formula One driver is more like being under pressure from Christian Horner. You know, Nick de Vries is gone, Daniel Ricciardo is breathing down your neck, you've had three or four bad races in a row, you need to do well, so you go out on FP1 and you fucking nail it, and then three corners in, your wheel's all bent and you're in the wall, and... It's not even the crash. It's the radio call after the crash where you go, oh, sorry, guys. You know, that it's that radio call. I think if I was a driver, I would just make out it didn't happen. It's like, yeah,
it's all going well, guys. Yeah.
It's really quite good. I'll do two more laps and I'll come in. They're like, yeah. Sergio,
we can see slightly wide at the front.
We can see you on the
telly. Taking it to get washed. I'll be back in a bit.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
I'm just doing some drills.
Do you know what, I think
here? Don't I won't be I'll be a while.
This is a weird thing, but I think I might not pit. How does that sound?
What's funny watching it back is that it's not like it's just an unfortunate thing where he was pushing it a little bit too hard on cold tires and he said, he had his wheels on the grass.
Yeah.
As he turned into the corner, he was completely off the track as he turned in, and obviously it lost all grip. But what are you doing?
The grass go round and round.
Sergio Perez goes round and round.
It was just a tiny bit. Like,
stops.
You don't need much. Yeah. Like 6 inches that was it. Gone.
But for an F1 driver on an outlap in FP1, that's a lot.
Yeah. And Max Verstappen didn't go on the grass. Lewis Hamilton didn't go on the grass. George Russell.
And even ignoring that fact, even just leaving aside for the fact that he fucked it up and lost a load of practice time, he then did qualifying and he was ninth.
Ninth in a Red Bull. That's like,
and what's funny is that is his best qualifying in the last six races.
So yeah, him finishing
six races.
Him finishing third is one shitter than his bare minimum contractual obligation.
Yes, exactly. Didn't he get driver of the day? I don't know if he actually got it, but he was certainly top of the voting.
He got driver of the
day. That's hilarious.
Because the other thing is that car in the race, especially, is got such an advantage over the other cars that I mean, obviously, I do a lot of hyperbole about I could be better. But I think even me getting in that car, I'd at least overtake the Haas. And I can't
And he was
drive.
Getting caught at the end by Hamilton as well.
Lewis of the
And
Hamilton.
Meanwhile, Verstappen was 30 seconds up the road, as per usual.
30 fucking seconds. Oh.
And it is, you know, we like to attack Verstappen for being a bit of a dick. But he's fucking good. He's not making any mistakes. He's coming in. He's nailing it every week. Doing nothing wrong. Just bang, 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 winning. And for all me knocking on Sergio Perez, like, he's an all right driver. You know, he's been around a long time. He's all right. It's not like they've got an absolute no mark in. I think Verstappen just must be really good.
Sorry. I just tried to mute the mic whilst sneezing, and I realised I didn't.
It didn't work.
No, exactly.
Yeah, it didn't work at all.
When was the last time that there was such a big gap between the two drivers in the top dominant team?
Ooh. It was probably the Schumacher era, but that was kind of contractual. That was like, you're not allowed
Schumacher
to get within
Barrichello.
3 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
You're being too
fast. No, you don't have to stay on the same lap as me.
Yeah.
If you get ahead, you must stop. I can't actually remember.
Bottas was on the when he was at Bottas, Mercedes was on Bottas, the podium most of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he, you know, he never looked like he was really going to beat Hamilton. But at the start of every season, there was like, oh, maybe. And for the first two races, he'd be like, ooh. And it would fizzle out by, you know, Bahrain. But
exactly.
But he'd still do. He wasn't.
I'm thinking Webber and Vettel was the same. Like, you always knew who was going to win, but
not this far apart from each other.
Yeah, no, not at all.
It has been fairly shambolic. And it seems a shame that De Vries can get the hoof after nine races and he's done better than Perez has done.
Mansell and Patrese, 1992.
They weren't that far apart, were they?
I don't know. I think Patrese didn't.
I mean,
get
Mansell
the
was clearly
active,
better,
but I think Patrese hated the active suspension, so I think he was relatively slow. I wouldn't say I couldn't say he was this slow, but
oh, that's I'd have to look the last. I can't remember. I don't remember him being shit.
You were 12, Phil. 12,
so I don't really, yeah, exactly. I don't remember brilliantly.
Actually, what
does Max
saying?
Prefer
when
having
I was
a slower 12? Teammate.
I used to copy down the times from CFAX, so I care much less now about Formula One.
That's an interesting question, Drew, about Verstappen.
Yeah.
Whether he gives a shit that Perez. I don't think he does. I think he's very much out for him. I don't think he's that bothered about his teammate.
No, I but think, like, does he prefer it that he's shit?
I
like,
think,
as opposed to being challenged by someone in,
think,
a, in an equally fast car.
Well, this is interesting
because
so, yeah, Lewis Hamilton always says that he likes to have a challenge, whereas Max Verstappen, I just think, and I'm not even calling him a dick for this thought because I think he's young and he's got the exuberance of youth. But I just think he thinks he'll beat anyone, so he'll be like, "Oh, bring it on!" Everyone that sat in the car next to me has ended up being dropped by the team, so surely I'm the best driver in the world.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, he can back that up with history and facts.
But none of those drivers have been like an excellent driver. Like, shove Lando Norris in that car, shove even Oscar Piastri in that car, and I think he'd have a bit of a worry.
Hmm. We'll see. Well, I mean, we might see sooner than later.
We
won't.
We're not going to see a driver like that. There's no way they're going to put a challenging driver in that car.
Well, the trouble is, who were they going to put in?
Daniel Ricciardo.
I mean, the only
Ricciardo.
Obvious.
Exactly, Daniel Ricciardo. Thing. I mean, talk about making a film. Here's an idea for a film. Hi, I'm Daniel Ricciardo. I've just ousted Sebastian Vettel, the four-time champion from the team he won the championship at. I'm now the daddy of the team. What? Who's this guy? Max Verstappen? He's making me feel a bit shit. I'm going to go to Renault. Oh, what? Renault? No, they don't like me either. Right, I'm going to go to McLaren. What? I'm shit now. Oh, I tell you what, I'm going to quit. What? I'm going to go back to Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, whatever. Great, and now I'm going to go back to where I left a few years ago, trying to be the daddy of the team, and now I'm the little tiny little boy going back, going, please, Max, can I come second to you? Oh, please. Please.
This is the trouble. We've seen this story before and we know how it ends. And it just shows the lack of depth in the Red Bull driver program. For all them touting it and going, oh, we've got two teams and we've got all these programs and they've sponsored all the... But like, they've got nobody.
The Red Bull driver program has been a farce for the
no
whole time.
Experience.
There has never been a good driver coming out of the Red Bull driver program.
Well, this is it. Well, I think we've talked about this before. Like, Verstappen didn't actually come out of the program, did he? They just signed him up from somebody
else. They signed him up the year before and went, oh, he's one of our young drivers, because Mercedes were about to snap him up.
Yeah. Oh, Vettel.
Who have been the
Vettel,
success?
Vettel was all right.
No, but he wasn't really in the young driver program, was he?
I can't remember.
I think
I But
right,
I don't think he was. He wasn't.
He's,
yeah. No, I don't think he was. But he sort of came. They signed him to Toro Rosso and he did well. But then you look at the long series of other people they've signed to Toro Rosso. That have, I mean, they've got plenty of Formula E champions who are world champions, as we know.
Oh, fuck off.
I don't know. It's just all... What are Red Bull doing?
McLaren.
Helmut Marko seems to get so much respect, and yet everything around him, apart from the fact that his team are winning all the time, suggests that he doesn't know what he's doing. Is that unfair?
The Red Bull driver program has been bullshit from the start, and now all the other teams have got their own programs. There's no space for a great driver. There's no drivers. There's no young driver. There are too many young drivers.
McLaren. Well, it looked like those post-upgrade performances weren't just flukes. Lando Norris got his second consecutive podium and celebrated by smashing Verstappen's trophy and then claiming it was an accident. Oscar Piastri also did pretty well, nabbing third at the start, but then went off track, tussled with Perez and knackered his car a bit. Still, they must be pretty happy in Woking, right?
I think they'll be absolutely delighted.
Does this ever
this
happen?
Be the best upgrade of... This is the hell of an upgrade.
This never happens. We watched Formula One for enough years to know that no team brings an upgrade that works so well they get podiums. That never happens.
I haven't seen an upgrade this good since they went to the newsagents and got some photocopies.
So, I'm a bit annoyed though. Oscar Piastri seems to be the real deal, correct?
He seems pretty good, considering he's in his first season, and apart from, well, last race he was right behind Norris without an upgrade, and this one he was right up there until, admittedly, he made a little bit of a mistake and fucked his car. But yes.
So, I have a question for both of you. What is the point of getting old?
I mean, I don't have an answer for you.
if there's one thing that we've been told about getting old is you develop wisdom, you get better at things, experience counts for a lot of things. And now all of these Formula One drivers are like 12 and they're actually fucking good. Like Max Verstappen is good. Oscar Piastri is good. These drivers are all actually good. What's the point? What's the point? The world...
Yeah.
The world is this... The world is a mess right now. Climate change, you know, right-wing politics everywhere. And it's all the over 30s, right? There's no it's youth. Us. There's no youth fucking it up. I think we need to kill us all off. Just everyone over 30 just drops dead. The whole world is run by the
kill the old. I think 30 is a little bit young. I would say, I don't know, like 43 and then have it just rise every year. Well, that would be the cutoff.
Do you know what? You're right. Actually, when you put it like that, I think that's a fair argument.
Yeah. And then, like, you know.
Like where you think people should be taxed more at 5% more than what you are.
Yeah, about four. Let's start it at 44 and then.
And obviously, the family of the members of people who are 43 and over should probably stay alive as well, and friends and colleagues. But everyone else is dead.
So only people over 44 with no friends or family. This is like a very complicated version of Logan's Run.
No, it's basically Twitter.
X.
There is no point in getting older. There is no advantage to it. There's no increase in experience and decrease in physical ability where there's an apex in the middle. It's just a downward slope. Well, unless the aging happens early on. It's like from 12 to 23 and the peak is at 18. Maybe that's what it is now.
I'm slightly better at not running out of money 24 hours after I've been paid. That's the upside, I'd say. But that might just
that helps you get around an F1
because
circuit.
I have apps now. No. Oh, you're talking in F1 terms, not just in life.
Oh God, in life, yeah. I'm also slightly better at managing my money, which is good. But I would take a better liver over that.
Yeah,
I'd better take livery,
more flexible muscles, and
better livery.
Nice.
I'm actually,
McLaren should be happy.
Fuck all that. I'm pretty happy. You know, I'm 43. You know, I had the shits all week, and my arm hurts, but I'm pretty happy.
Should they have like the PGA, like they have the older golfers tour? They should have that for Formula One, like the aged Formula One.
Well, they
One
used
drivers.
To. They had the Masters Championships back in the early to mid 2000s, was it? They had Nigel Mansell, they had probably Piquet, they had Derek
Fittipaldi.
Warwick, all the greats.
Great, yeah,
yeah.
Anyway,
I know, and it lasted three races, and then it went bankrupt. But yeah,
because they're not very good at looking out for their money, looking after their money.
Anyway, yeah, but McLaren are very happy, I'm sure.
Well done, then.
Mercedes. Getting a pole position in fourth place doesn't seem that bad for Mercedes, but it could have been better. Could Lewis have held on if he hadn't messed up the start? Could he have pushed more at the end to get a podium from Perez? Could George Russell not have catastrophically fucked up qualifying and started from higher than 18th? Answer us, Toto!
So, first things first. George Russell qualifying. I hate George Russell, but... that wasn't his fault. I don't know why they put him out so into all the traffic. But that thing he was doing where he was like, oh, I'm going to go really slow because I've got to get some space. I'm going to go really slow because I've got to get some space. And then everyone just being like, fuck this. It's like being in Tesco and you're behind someone and you're just like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to go past him. It was like that. And I don't blame any single one of them for going past him. He was being a dick. He shouldn't have been in that place.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's Q1, you just need a banker at that stage. You're not going for the fastest lap, you're just not in the bottom
not
five.
Trying to be, yeah, just yeah. Don't get knocked out, George.
Yeah, it just seems such a... It was like that race when everyone was waiting to go and no one finished in time and like everyone knocked themselves out because they were all waiting for the right
yeah,
moment to
I
go
thought
and
that
no
was
one made
brilliant.
It through.
I thought the same thing was going to happen. But do you think... I think that George Russell, because I don't like him, I think he's joined Mercedes and he thinks he should be earned, he deserves some kind of respect for being a Mercedes driver because Lewis Hamilton has. He sees that Lewis Hamilton gets respect for being an 8-times world champion, 8*. And
you said it.
I said it.
Oh, no,
and
you didn't.
George Russell thinks that the reason Lewis Hamilton gets that respect is because of the Mercedes overalls. When it's not, it's because he's been a well-renowned Formula One driver for 10 years. Whereas 15 years. Whereas George Russell, no one likes you, mate. That's it.
He's a bit entitled.
He's so entitled. So it was a bad... I'm going to call him Lord Snooty.
It's a great, great dandy reference there from the 80s.
Beano,
was it the Beano? Was it Dandy? Oh, it's got the mixed up.
I don't know. It
did seem that Mercedes chose a very bad time to suddenly not be good at starts, because their starts have been really good lately, until the time when they needed a really good start, and it was terrible.
And Max has been a bit slow off the line.
I know, I really
quite
thought...
a few times.
I really thought it was going to be Hamilton into the first corner, then because you know that Max Verstappen has been like really fair in racing people since Abu Dhabi 21, because he's not, well, he's not been up against Lewis Hamilton.
He's not had to. So he's just like, I'll just overtake you next lap.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Whereas, but even like the, in the start of 22, do you remember like him and Leclerc were going back and forth, like doing
and
a bit of ding dong, and it was like total load of space. There was none of this kind of driving off the track because he's got this hatred for Hamilton. So I was thinking that Hamilton's going to get the first quarter, and then he's going to do a old Verstappen move, and it's going to be all the fans are going to go crazy, and then Lewis Hamilton just fucking ruined that by being shit.
It was really clumsy as well. It wasn't even like a real dramatic late lunge. It was just. Nudged him a little bit off track, and then he lost two more positions.
I know.
Or he got wheel spin at the start, I think, and then just couldn't. Yeah, and then he just got swamped.
Yeah.
It's a hard track to overtake. Could have had Lewis holding Max back, and then having two hungry McLarens right behind him. Oh. That could have been interesting for two whole laps.
Oh. Anyway.
Oh, well.
No. There's an alternative universe where that happened, but not this one.
AlphaTauri. We're putting them higher up on the running order, not because they did particularly well, but because they're actually interesting for a change. With Nyck de Vries out on his ear, Daniel Ricciardo came back to F1 and was actually pretty good. Who benefits most from this new arrangement, then?
Well,
surely Danny Piastri.
I think... Well, yeah. I mean, Danny Rick's the obvious, wasn't he? Like, well, I don't know, because this race has gone all right. I think he did well. He out-qualified and out-finished Tsunoda, which is what you've got to do. But if he doesn't do that, he is finished. Not just, like, looks a bit bad. His F1 career is over. He's out.
He did it straight away. We would have given him this race, surely. Mm. Like this race, you would go like, okay, your first one back. He hasn't had much time in this car. He did all his testing in the Red Bull. So it's a slightly different car. So if he hadn't, we would have gone, okay, well, new car. But he came straight out the gate and did it. So that's a very good sign.
No, he did well. We haven't actually had recorded since the news came out that he had got the drive. Do we want to reflect a bit on that and on Nyck de Vries at all? Because ironically, it came out literally about half an hour after we finished recording the last episode.
Oh, I could do my joke. Can I do my joke?
Go on then. Yes.
F1 is a brutal sport, and yet again, another driver has been dropped mid-season without any warning. Will we ever see Brad Pitt on the grid again? Anyway, I mean, Nyck de Vries is just another
again than Nyck de Vries.
True, Nyck de Vries is another in a long line of Red Bull casualties. Which is, I mean, there's something. Do you remember in the 80s when the IRA would do a bobbing? They would do a warning of that they'd ring a news station or the police with like a code word, so they'd know it was a real IRA. And I think that's what Helmut Marko does, because he never just fires someone out of the blue. He'll fire someone, but a few weeks before, he'll do an interview going, well, if they don't get their act together, they're going to get fired. And you go, you fired him, haven't you? You've done it, haven't you? You've already decided. There's none of this kind
it's
of...
It's already been planted.
Yeah, yeah, you've already said it. And it's just what I feel that he does. He's just kind of, again, just kind of gone, oh. Like just because he's got one fucking eye, he thinks he can do some kind of Nick Nolte... Hang on, is it Nick Nolte or Nick Knowles? Which one am I thinking of? you know,
quite different people.
Quite different people. I'm thinking of Nick Knowles. DIY SOS, you know, that guy. No, just he does this kind of like, oh, well, I tell you what, I say to all the press that he's shit and I'm going to fire him, and let's see if that lights a spark up him. And he's like, no, it's not. It's going to make him shit because you're going to shit. He's like, oh, I've lost my big chance. Oh, God, I go to pieces if the fucking postman looks at me funny.
The weird thing about Marco,
I don't know what
so
my point is,
kind of stuff. I don't know either. I'm just moving on. The weird thing about Marco being so brute about this is he fucking hired him in the first place. It was him that decided he wanted to get him after he saw him do that one good race last year for Williams when Albon had appendicitis. And
oh my God, that's it.
His entire thing on that. And I now can't remember if I've definitely read this, but I'm sure in my mind I might have possibly read this, is that Horner wasn't that bothered about De Vries and didn't particularly.
No, you're right.
Marco was like, no, you should get him. He's going to be great.
You're right. Horner
and now he's just like, oh, he was never any good. What's the point? Let's just get rid of him. This says nothing good about... This is a lot more bad stuff about Marco than it does about De Vries.
No,
he's just hiring people on a whim and they turn out to be shit and it's just been going on for ages.
This is exactly it. What's happening is that Helmut Marko is like a gambler who's lost his lucky streak and he's just there going, right, I've just got to... He's the same thing. He's going to go, right, I've just got to be confident. That guy did a good race for Williams. Right, get him in, get him in. Don't worry about it. Yeah. I'm back, baby. I'm back. All right, get Danny Ricciardo in. Fuck everything.
Daddy needs a new yacht. Bet okay, everything so, on Nick and it didn't work.
I was a little annoyed that Ricciardo did well because, frankly, for the shits and giggles, I was hoping he would just be going, oh, guys, I don't know what's happening. I'm shit again. But, you know, well done him. Maybe the McLaren was a badly suited car for him. Which puts Piastri and Norris in a great position because it's like, well, they're doing all right.
It's almost like racing cars are complicated and fuck difficult that. To understand.
Ferrari. Ferrari were aiming for fifth and might have got it for the usual fuck-ups, a failed wheel gun, a five-second speeding penalty for Leclerc, and slow driving for Sainz. Will Ferrari just be meh for the rest of the year?
Yes.
I know that Carlos Sainz is sick of the Ferrari strategy team, but I'm really getting pissed off with Carlos Sainz's. No, I'm not going to do it. No. Are we going to go to Code Sierra? No. No, we're going to go to Code Capri.
I don't like old Fords.
Yeah, fuck you.
Oh, we both went the same place. That's good.
Well, I think...
There's no trust.
I think Ferrari are doing reverse psychology on him there. That's my new theory. They say to him, Carlos, we don't want you to switch to plan B. Well, I'm going to switch to plan B then. Fuck you.
Carlos, we think you should hold and not go for the win.
Oh, fine. Well, I'll stick behind Leclerc. And Leclerc just seems to... Leclerc just seems to have given up as well. He's just like, he sounds miserable on the radio.
I can only imagine what the morale is like there. Just lowering every week. It's like getting into your race suit and going, oh, God, what's going to happen this weekend?
Like, and especially for Leclerc, because Leclerc saw Alonso, he saw Vettel get broken by Ferrari, and he thought it would be different, and it wasn't. It's like the woman in the friend group, and everyone says, don't do it, mate.
The only way to survive at Ferrari is not giving a shit, which is what Raikkonen was good at, and he won a world championship with them.
Isn't it?
Just by not giving a fuck, it's just like...
That actually is amazing, isn't it? Because Raikkonen probably had the longest Ferrari career out of those people, the only one to have won a championship, and looked as if he did it by mistake.
Yeah, didn't care if he was winning, didn't care if he was losing. Yeah. He was just like, it is what it is. Don't know why it's French, but you know what I mean.
Wow.
Because anyway. A Finnish accent is difficult to do.
Is it? Is it? Oh, that's Dutch.
It's not even Dutch.
Yes, it is.
That's just racist. No, I can't do it.
Yep, bup, bup. Anyway.
I'm trying to think of any Finnish words I know.
Valteribattas.
Valteribattas.
Maletta.
Aston Martin. Aston's descent into mediocrity continues. Both drivers scored points, but only just, and I don't have much else to say about them. What happened to the podium nudges we saw earlier in the season?
It's all gone wrong. Podium nudges, great phrase. It sounds like bikini sponge. What's it? Bikini smugglers? No.
Bikini sponges? What?
Budgie smugglers.
I've just got my bikini sponges on.
The podium nudging would have also knocked over the trophy.
Yeah, that's true. Just
to be a fly on the wall of in anywhere that Fernando Alonso is right now, that fly is going to be dead because he's going to be punching the wall.
This is the start. He's desperately trying to hang on to his dreams and his enthusiasm. You notice he hasn't been praising Stroll much in the last couple of races.
Because the thing is, because it's not just that the other teams have brought upgrades that are better than theirs. Aston Martin have also brought some pretty hefty upgrades, and they've obviously gone in the wrong direction somewhere. And this is the first point. Yeah, this is the first point where they go, well, hang on, do we go back? Do we carry on going? You know, this is what Mercedes had all of last year and this year. It's like, if you go in the wrong direction with a budget cap and with timing and everything, what the fuck do you do? Whereas Alonso is just there going, get it right. Get it fucking right.
Don't make me slag things off on the radio, because I will.
Gonna punch something. So, great. I'm enjoying this.
It's starting. It's happening. Buckle up, fucklehead.
It's like we knew it would happen, but I can't believe it's happening. It's like when you get the big present for Christmas. You're like, I knew I was going to get it, but I can't believe I'm getting it.
It's like your parents have just said, what do you think about going to Disney World? You're like, what?
Williams. Alex Albon hasn't been lower than 11th for the past four Grand Prix, which for Williams is pretty damn good. And to get 11th in the low-speed Hungaroring is even more impressive. Also, Logan Sargeant was there, and retired out of shame near the end.
Alex Albon's driving really, really well.
James Vowles did an interview where he said that some of the systems and the facilities, not just facilities, but some of the systems at Williams are like 20 years out of date compared to Mercedes. Which again, as I've always thought, there are just some old farts in Williams going, no, we do it this way here. This is a Williams way. We've won more world championships than anyone else except for Ferrari and Red Bull and McLaren. And we know how to do things here, which is why I will be painting this carbon fiber on with asbestos. Thank you.
Yes. Our autoclaves are steam powered, and that's the way we've always done it.
Yes.
Are you allowed to, under the cost cap rules, are you allowed to sort of do capital expenditure like building new facilities, or does that come within the cost cap?
No, I think the facilities don't. I think you can do that. So
they can upgrade their like factory and their steam powered bullshit.
But what I hate about the factory is like, because this was happening with Aston Martin and Alpine, it's like they're going to upgrade the factory. It's going to take 4 years, and you're like, I don't want to wait 4 years. I've got a podcast to do. But whatever he's doing, he's like, you know, there's been several managers come in betwixt Claire Williams and now, and they've got some results. And the only other time they've had some results in the past is when they had that Mercedes engine that was so fast that you could have bolted it onto a fucking pushchair and it would have got third.
And that sounds like something I'd like to see. They're doing really well. Alex Albon is doing really well. The car is not the worst car. It's all right. And considering where Williams had been for the past God knows how long, we'll take that. But I wonder how long Albon will stay there if he keeps driving really well, because people start sniffing around him. And he could end up as a second driver at Red Bull.
Is Red Bull going to become like, Have I Got News For You and this podcast, and just have a revolving series of old favourites coming in?
Drew, you fancy a seat at Williams or Red Bull?
Yeah, I'll take my turn. Take a number, I'll be next. Alpine. So many jokes about Ocon and Gasly taking each other out this season, and it's happened again. But once again, it wasn't their fault. This was the second double DNF in a row for Alpine. Do we think their new CEO is going to shout at them again?
I don't think he can. I mean, they weren't brilliant this weekend, but that was...
It was unfortunate.
It was very unfortunate. It was Joe's fault, and we'll talk about him in a minute. But I don't really know what you can do when both your cars get taken out of the first corner again.
Well, it's basically a first lap incident, isn't it? I mean, as I think Gasly said, I think it was Ocon said it, that if you qualify in the midfield, you risk these things happening. You know, this doesn't happen when you're first and second. So they've got to get faster and better, but they don't seem to be doing faster and better. They seem to be...
Well, it's because the management doesn't know what the fuck it's doing. I think hopefully this new setup. I mean, I feel like we've been saying this for seasons.
Come
now.
On, we've been saying this since it
hoping was against hope.
Renault
since it was Renault Lotus Lotus Renault Tolman. Renault Lotus. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's hilarious that we were so convinced that Ocon and Gasly were going to be fighting and taking each other out all season. They haven't done that.
Oh, they will
deliberately.
They will.
I mean, they might still. But I haven't heard anything about them fighting, have you? Maybe they're just too busy being depressed about how everything is.
Yeah, well, I think they both know there's no point being over-competitive until they've got a competitive car. They're the inverse of Alonso.
That's quite a good saying. There's no point in being competitive until you have a competitive car. To finish first.
Put on a T-shirt.
First you have to build a car.
Yes.
It's not as catchy.
If you no longer see a gap, then you don't have a competitive car.
If you don't see a gap, then you are the gap.
Ooh.
Doesn't really work, does it?
Deep.
Alfa Romeo. Ojo Guan Yu. It was all going really, really well. Right up until the lights went out. Qualified fifth, but then the car didn't work at the start and everyone went past him. Keen to make up for lost time, he then took out loads of them, smashing into Ricciardo. Bottas also had a decent qualifying, but lost places when Zhou caused carnage and dropped out of the points. Was this a flash in the pan, or could Alpha do something good if they stopped fucking up?
I mean, they were on the tip of doing something good. Like, I know they particularly targeted this race.
Just the tip.
I don't understand. In qualifying, what it was like I was watching, you know, a bizarro world dream sequence where Bottas was like in the lead of qualifying for a bit, and it wasn't even just
briefly.
Kind of,
yeah,
it wasn't even like, oh, you know, it's like the first cars a set of tyres, so he's like number one. He's like number one ahead of all the other cars, and then Joe Gagné was like up there, and he qualified fucking fifth. And I'm like, what? I mean, what's the point? What's the point in knowing anything?
Because this is a slow speed corner, turns out the Alpha is very good at going slowly.
So they go slowly really well.
They're so good at it. They've put everything into going slowly, and so, you know, they were really had high hopes at this track, and it was looking so good until it literally started. And apparently some random brake emergency system kicked in at the start, and they were, I read an interview with one of the engineers who was basically going, we're not entirely sure how this has happened, how when we told the car to go, all the brake systems came on and stopped the car from going anywhere. And then Zhou panicked and took everyone out and got in Bottas's way. And then all their hard work within one corner, they were well out of the points and couldn't get back to it again.
And yeah, so Alpine's race, fucking their race, it was beautiful.
Yeah, what's another track that's a bit like Hungary in terms of lots of slow corners? Like maybe Singapore or something? They might be all right there, maybe.
But
having said that, were they any good at Monaco? I can't remember. I mean, Monaco's really slow. Maybe that's not the same.
I always struggle with the standings and Zhou Gagné because I don't know anything about him. I've never seen him interviewed. I don't know what he looks like. I just know that he's that driver in Alfa Romeo. So now I got something. Now every standings I'll be like, oh, he started shit that one time. Woo! I'm like I'm like a British pub banter lad going, hey, he had a curry once, we're gonna call him no.
It's too much bantery.
You're too bantery. That's why I left the country.
Get wrong with the fever on the dance floor.
What? Oh.
Yeah. Nico Hülkenberg dyed his hair blonde, a move that some say was to do with the Barbie movie and the fact he has Ken in his name. But we reckon it's more out of a deep love for Jacques Villeneuve. Regardless, Hulk was once again the best Haas driver and once again got into Q3 before once again falling back in a bad car. Meanwhile, Kevin Magnussen didn't seem to know how to drive anymore. He was the last driver to finish, despite being 13th after the first corner.
Again,
says it all, really, doesn't it?
The thing I was saying about the young drivers being really good, and then there's a couple of old farts in the Haas that aren't using their wisdom and knowledge and experience to do a canny, let's do a strategy that these youngsters wouldn't understand. They're just shit.
Well, Hülkenberg's qualifying well, but the car's bollocks.
I don't care. Fuck them. Done. I'm done with them. I'm done with
a couple of old farts.
It's like, yeah, I know they're both like 20. Yeah, and I know they're both 27 or something. Hang on, how old?
I think they might even be in their 30s. Are they the oldest team? What's the oldest driver pairing? Actually, Alonso must be putting the average up a lot.
Hülkenberg's 35.
There you go. Yeah, he's getting on a bit.
Yeah, old fart.
Kevin Magnussen is 30. So they're both over 30.
Yeah, get rid of them. Time to go. Shoot them.
Oh, wow. That's an episode of Drive to Survive. It's good to Steiner coming out with a shotgun over his arm.
He drive to survive, didn't he? Didn't.
No. You didn't drive, so you don't survive.
All of which takes us to the standings with Terry Saunders.
So, for the driver standings this week, I thought I would see how each driver would react if they broke a £40,000 trophy on the podium. So, Max Verstappen would actually break out in a cold sweat because Jos is coming and he gets angry. Sergio Perez would just say, I don't break things. I'm really good at looking after things. Fernando Alonso in third place would say, something broke. I can win this race, which is a hark back to Singapore 2008, whatever it was.
Lewis Hamilton would say, the crowd here are great. George Russell would say, you shouldn't have broken that, I'm telling. Carlos Sainz would say, I'm not going to break the vase. You told me to break the vase, I won't break it. Charlie Clerk would say, are any of the shards sharp enough to cut me? Oh, Charlie, you're in a bad way. Lando would say, the last McLaren driver with a novelty podium exercise went well for him, didn't it? Lance Stroll would just say, buy him a new one. Esteban Ocon would say, I didn't do it. Oscar Piastri would say, that didn't make me shoot my gun, which is my joke about Oscar Pistorius is still there. Pierre Gasly would say, I didn't do it either. Alexander Albon would be, that was where my mum keeps her stash. Nico Hülkenberg says, I've seen the Barbie film. You're on the wrong standings, Nico. Valtteri would say, I haven't been on a podium for so long, I forgot what a vase looks like. Joe Gagneux would be, all I've got to do is not break the vase. Oh, no, I broke the vase. Yuki Tsunoda would be like, oh, Ricciardo didn't break the vase. And Kevin Magazine would say, I saw Oppenheimer. So, Kevin, wrong standing. Talking of which, team standings. If the teams went to see a film this week, what film would they see? Because everyone's talking about it. It's the double bill. Who would go and see what? Red Bull would go and see Oppenheimer because they are destroying Formula One. Mercedes would see Barbie because they're fun. Aston Martin would see Wolf of Wall Street because they love money and quaaludes. Ferrari would see Falling Down, which is just Charlie Clerk like with a machine gun going, I'm fucking sick of this. McLaren would see On the Up with Dennis Waterman, not a film, but you know, they're doing quite well. Alpine would see Pink Panther, a bit racist. Williams would see The Great Dictator because it's a really old film about Frank Williams. Haas would see Fast and Furious 7 because it's shit. Alfa Romeo would see Fast and Furious 6 because I didn't write anything for Alfa Romeo. And AlphaTauri would just watch Muppet Babies, also a TV show. Not my best.
And now, the man of the match of driving.
Oscar
Lando Norris.
And now it's time for the State of F1 with Terry Saunders.
My screen is so far away, I can't read the writing. Hello, I'm old.
I drive for Haas.
12 races. No, I'm not talking about the 1987 Formula One season, but the number of races Red Bull has won on the trot, which must really piss off Toto Wolff, because you'd think they managed that in the last few years at Mercedes, wouldn't you? If you said, who was the last team to win 12 races on the trot? You'd say Mercedes, because it makes sense. But no, they failed at being obnoxiously dominant and just settled for being really fucking dominant. The last time someone won 12 races in a row was Ferrari and Michael Schumacher. So here I am, applauding Red Bull. Sorry, I got a bit sick there. Sorry, that must be the food poisoning. It's one of the many records that, although undoubtedly impressive, and hats off to Christian Horner and... Sorry, I can't do it. I can't do it. It does only really highlight that F1 has, in the last 30 years, moved to a sort of Chinese dynasty system where competition is measured in eras, not years. Oh, this vase is from the Vettel dynasty. For the majority of this century, you can often tell the winner of at least a Constructors' Championship from testing and can often deduce that they'll pretty much stay that way until a rule change. But don't worry, I have a solution. More rule changes. Let's not shake up Formula One with sprint races or tyre-based qualifying. Let's do some blue sky thinking. Instead of this stupid one car has to fit all the circuits of the year, how about a more modular-based F1? Each race can be its own category with the proviso that all teams must adjust their cars to fit. So one race can be with a modern hybrid F1, the next week all the cars have to strap in a V10, and the week after they've got to shove in an electric car. It's not just engines. The next race, no wings. The one after that, four wings. Ground effect is here today. It's a smooth floor is there tomorrow. This weekend, it's refueling. Next week, it's all about hydrogen. Under the probably grossly extended and entirely unaffordable cost cap, but it's not my job to make it work, you boring pencil pushers, the teams decide whether to focus on areas of expertise and buy off-the-shelf parts to make up the numbers or to create a truly modular system that shines in every variation. And the final race is anything fucking goes. Let Adrian Newey build his Thunder Falcon or whatever it's called.
That'd be good. They roll out the absolute sum of all fears at the end of every season.
Like the boss car. It would be the boss car with everything. But the thing is, I mean, obviously this is ridiculous, but at the same time, I quite like the idea of just being like, right, this week, no aero. You've got an engine, you've got a chassis. Yeah. You've got to have a smooth kind of 1990s style car. And then next week, you can have all the flicks, all the fucking flicks you want.
Nice. Chaparral wings, like those early ones from the late 60s, early 70s. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Wings that will break when you go around a corner.
I know I write a lot of State of F1s, but this, I think, is genius. I think I've cracked it. I think I've cracked Formula One. After all these years, sorted. Modular F1.
That's it from us. It's goodbye to Phil Tromans.
Goodbye. We haven't had time to talk about the fact that Sebastian Vettel has warned that F1 could get banned by some countries if they don't sort out their polluting game. Too polluty.
And to Terry Saunders.
We haven't had time to talk about me scrolling through Autosport right now to try and find something to not talk about. Oh, there's an offer for camping. We haven't had time to talk about that.
We'll be back next week to discuss the Belgian Grand Prix in Belge. In the meantime, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/forF1'sSake, and follow us on Twitter, @forF1'sSake. Terry, where can people buy merch?
ff1s.com/shop/shop.
Thanks for listening. I've been Drew Stern. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you very much, Drew. Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Podcast Network.